You're listening to Stories That Matter, a Hokwe podcast. In this episode, we hear from public philosopher Roman Krusnarik, who was a changemaker in residence at Hokwe in January 2019.
The tragedy of our time is that we have colonized the future. We treat the future as a distant colonial outpost where we dump ecological degradation and technological risk and public debt and nuclear waste. We treat it as if there's nobody there. But more and more people are starting to say, wait, there is somebody there, and we need to give them a voice. My name is Roman Krusnarik. I'm a writer and a public philosopher. I'm also the founder of the world's first empathy museum, a museum where you can step into the shoes of other people and see the world through their eyes. Public philosopher is a term I've started using to describe myself because I can't think of anything better. I'm sometimes called a philosopher, but that sounds a little bit too inward-looking, a bit too introspective or even academic. But all of my work is about how to apply philosophical thought broadly to the challenges of social, political, and ecological life. So if you go into my study where I live in Oxford and look on the wall, there are two circles drawn, overlapping. And one of them says the art of living, and the other one says social change. And the point where they meet is where I try and do my work, my writing and talking and thinking. Certainly there's been no formula to my life except it's been a search for freedom. For me, I've always been, I think, afraid of being trapped by institutions. I've always left jobs that I thought were limiting my creative self. So when I used to be an academic, I was driven mad by it and had to get out. That search for freedom has been really important. It's been a kind of a lodestar that I have followed, a sense of autonomy. And really, ultimately, it's about maintaining a capacity to critique the culture in which I live, and to understand the assumptions and prejudices that I've inherited from that culture. Like, and we all have. We've all become consumers. Well, most people have become consumers. Or we have certain views about religion or class or whatever. And these are, of course, inherited. And for me, freedom is about the struggle against those inherited ideas and trying to reinvent new ones which might serve our purpose better, to face the challenges of our time, the faces of ecological crisis, inequality, migration, technological risk, all the things that are taking us in a pretty dire direction. In a sense, you know, just do it has really become just buy it. The way we exercise our freedom is by pushing the buy now button. In a sense, consumer culture has hijacked what freedom means today. So have other forces too, like digital culture. It's important to think about how to be free. I'm a parent, and I have twins who are 10 years old. Much of my life is dedicated to them. Now, am I free if I'm spending all my time taking them to football matches or arguing with them about how much time they can spend looking at a computer? Well, the freedom comes in relationship. It comes in that creative interaction with people, in that case. So there's freedom is kind of double-edged there. Something new has come into my life, my relationship with my children. On one level, it's constricting. On another, it allows me to think new thoughts, develop new parts of my emotional life. I mean, before my children were born, my emotions were really about the breadth of one octave on a piano. But now they are a whole piano keyboard. I feel joy more strongly, and I feel anger and sorrow more strongly, and love more strongly, everything more strongly. It's amazing. Now that probably is a pretty good definition of what freedom is to play your emotions on the whole keyboard rather than just one octave. So I don't know if I'm good at that or not good at that, but I'm constantly thinking about my freedom. It's about a kind of mindful awareness. And I can look back at my each day that I live and ask myself, was I free? Was I trapped? Was I following the crowd? There's a wonderful sculpture that the Swiss sculptor Alberto Giacometti made. In fact, he used to make his sculptures, some of them in the 1940s, by putting little bits of clay on top of each other until he created these long, very, very tall, thin figures. And in a way, each of those lumps of clay we use to make a portrait of ourselves. Each lump of clay is like a choice that we make in life. And sometimes you put a big lump of clay on, you make a big choice and your life goes in a new direction. That's an exercise of freedom. Sometimes you make a terrible choice and you're desperately adding new bits of clay, trying to smooth it over and make that figure look okay. That's also exercises of freedom where disasters happen. But sometimes we add the bits of clay and that figure of ourself starts looking like the figures of other people, because we are all buying our furniture from IKEA or whatever. We're, you know, copying other people's lives. We're absorbing that culture. And I think we can look at that sculpture of ourselves and ask ourselves, you know, is this sculpture of who I am, who I've built over the years, a sculpture that has its own life, can walk in its own direction, has the energy to do that? Or is it really a replica, something somewhat artificial? And I hope that the sculpture I'm building my own life is one that can sort of walk in its own unique way. I had this idea for founding an empathy museum, the idea that every city should have a place you could go and understand and explore what it might be like to be somebody who is different from you. Being able to see the world through the perspective of another person is one of the most fundamental ways to overcome social divides. So I had the idea to found an empathy museum. One of the main exhibitions is called A Mile in My Shoes, and it's a gigantic shoebox that you can walk inside. It says A Mile in My Shoes on the outside, and it's the world's first empathy shoe shop. So you go in, and somebody will fit you with a pair of shoes belonging to a stranger. So it might be someone who's been in a prison for 14 years, or a sex worker, or a Syrian refugee, and you can literally walk in their actual shoes while listening to an audio narrative of them talking about their life, which is about 10 minutes long. It's very simple, it's very powerful, it's very intimate. And I think that's one of the powers of empathy, is that it makes us see a little bit of ourselves in someone who's very different from us. Makes us ask questions about who we are. And I think that's a very exciting thing. It nurtures our curiosity. When I think about what it is to be human, I think about three different things. One of those things is about relationships. Human beings really care about the quality of their relationships. And I wrote a book about empathy, which was about relationships. But something else human beings care about is autonomy, having a sense of freedom. And that's what my book Carpe Diem Regained is about. And if you think of it as a triangle, there's a third corner of the triangle, which is the idea of purpose. Having a goal in life, what the Greeks called a telos, something bigger than us, that transcends us, that can be a lodestar to direct what we do. And I wrote a book about that too. It's called How to Find Fulfilling Work. It's about finding purpose in work and other parts of life. So they're the three corners of the triangle that I've tried to write about. And, you know, they relate to each other in all sorts of ways, but some kind of combination of those three is, I think, what a lot of people are looking for when they're looking for well-being in their lives. But I've now embarked on a new book that I'm working on here at Hawkwood, which is a book which is, in a way, taking me in a different direction. It's a book about the future. So when I think to myself, what is the future all about? Our future, my future. It's about how to be a good ancestor. And that's what my new book is all about, to try and explore that and understand that and give it meaning. The idea of being a good ancestor has lots of facets to it, which I'm still trying to understand. I mean, in a sense, it is about trying to create a culture where we're thinking about our planetary home and what happens to it. It's about trying to think about future generations and the legacy that we might leave in a serious way. But it also, of course, involves thinking about issues of social justice like inequality. All of these things, which makes it a bit of a big topic for a book. But at the base, it's about challenging the pathological short-termism of the modern world. We know politicians can't see beyond the next election and companies beyond the next quarterly report, and we're looking at our phones 110 times a day. So it's about, in a way, extending our minds beyond our own lifetimes at the most fundamental level. And that's a very difficult thing for human beings to do. The challenge is then to create a kind of cultural evolution where we replace our short-term individualistic culture with a more collective long-term culture. And it's impossibly difficult to do that. What is the good life all about? I know what it's not about. It's not about happiness. I try never to mention the word happiness in any of my books. I think happiness is a disastrous concept. The concept of happiness is disastrous in a sense because it's become highly individualistic. If you ask someone in the 18th century what happiness then was both about the individual but also about the collective good. And I think we've lost that. And also because happiness means so many things to different people. And also, in a sense, it's also been captured by certain movements. So the idea of being emotionally up rather than down. Well, in my life, those moments of being down can be great. Anger can be great. All sorts of things which are not necessarily positive emotions can be great. So I don't like talking about happiness. But if I am thinking about what the good life looks like for me, it is about a combination of relationships, autonomy, and having purpose. This triangle of three different things which I think are important to most human beings. And in my own life, it can take lots of different forms. That can be about sitting down in front of my computer, like I've been doing at Hawkwood, and working on a chapter of my new book, and it is a struggle. I'm not having a great time, but wow, it gives me a sense of being alive. But equally, that good life can look like the exploration of relationships, whether it's climbing a tree with my children or talking to a stranger on the bus. The way we understand time is an inheritance from the Industrial Revolution. The first mechanical clocks, which emerged in the 14th century, used to just chime on the hour and sometimes on the quarter hour. But by 1700, most clocks had minute hands. By 1800, they had second hands. And now, of course, we're counting the nanoseconds. And we've become obsessed with a very limited view of time where we slice it up, we speed it up. And so we need to rethink of our relationship in relation to time. The classic concept here is the idea of deep time, the idea that we are just one part of billions of years of planetary and universal history, and our own moment in it is just the tiniest moment. And I think that kind of perspective would be very useful today, because we would start taking the longer view. We'd start thinking about the generations ahead. Because until we start thinking beyond our own lifespans, we can't really deal with the kind of problems we have today. Most of our social, political, and economic institutions were developed in the Holocene, the era in which we had a stable climate. So things like nation states, representative democracy, consumer capitalism. But we're in a different stage now, the Anthropocene, where we have become the weather makers, and our institutions are not designed for that. That's why we can't make decent global agreements on climate change. That's why we can't find ways to deal with technological risks like bioweapons. Our institutions are completely maladapted to the world that we're living in. And I think ultimately, if we have a different concept of time, we might start thinking about how to recalibrate those institutions or reinvent completely new ones. And that might sound very abstract or too big, but I think it's the only way. Deep time. Am I happy? No, I'm not happy. Partly because I'm not happy with the world, partly because I'm always hard on myself. You know, it's not a question I ever ask myself. But I'm willing to start mulling it over right now.
Thanks for listening to Stories That Matter, a Hawkwood podcast. To find out more about Roman, Hawkwood and our residencies, visit our website or follow us on Twitter. All of the information can be found in the show notes just below this episode. This episode was produced by Laura Bing with music by Daisy and Her Cora, playing an original composition, Bertha.